Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. This is going to be a very different show because it's a very different evening. It was funny. Jen kind of sat down, or Jen walked into the room, and I was sitting there kind of in a dark room, and she's like, "Is everything okay?" And I said, "Honestly, it's just a lot to take in." And in a moment like this, just like we said back when they were discussing whether or not to go to the bubble in the first place, I just said my place here is to ask questions, is to listen, and to try to facilitate a productive conversation. So I'm doing so with this episode with maybe one of the smartest people in all of basketball Twitter. Curtis Harris runs at Pro Hoops History. He has a Substack. It's a great account to follow. Even though he and I like to throw our haymakers at each other every so often because of, former players compared to current players or whatever. But this is a very different conversation. Curtis is a historian of all of sports, and this is a significant moment in history. This was players striking and boycotting for a playoff game, and now it has since been reframed as the games are postponed or whatever. But Curtis, one, how are you doing? Two, thank you very much for joining us. And then three, like, where does this fit in the grand scheme of major statements made by athletes, whether it's professional, collegiate, whatever? Where does this rank in all this? They're not even ranked, but where does this fall in the long history of as some love to demand us to do, keeping politics out of sports?
Yeah, well, first off, you know, I'm doing well enough. That's my answer nowadays, is well enough, given everything that happens.
2020 is occurring.
Yeah. But I would say tonight, at least I'm on the East Coast, so it's already nighttime here. It's definitely, like, obviously important, but it's also unique in that, as far as I can tell, you know, my expertise is in NBA and professional basketball history. This is the first instance where players have really decided to boycott, strike, just withhold their labor from a game related to something that's not directly tied to the NBA. So, obviously, it's important to the NBA players to address racism, and it has been in the past. But previously, back, you know, the 50s and 60s, when there was a lot of protesting going on from NBA players, they would protest, you know, with the civil rights movement, but they wouldn't protest or, you know, threaten to not play an NBA game because of something that happened in, say, Selma, Alabama. Like, that was not what was happening. They were addressing specific instances of racism that happened with NBA games. So a lot of folks have brought up already today, in 1961, Bill Russell and Casey Jones and other members of the Celtics refused to play an exhibition game because of discrimination at the hotel they were staying at. So that's, like, directly related to the NBA game that was happening. What's happening today is very important, but it's not directly tied to the NBA. It's about the police brutality, you know, in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and other instances over the past year. And now they're saying that we're not going to play this NBA game for something that's not directly tied to the NBA. So I think that's what's unique and very important about what's happened today.
How frustrating. Like, I just want to put myself in a room with you when, you know, either you or one of your peers or colleagues are told by some rando with nine numbers at the end of their @ on Twitter to keep politics out of sports. This isn't what I come to watch sports for. Because, again, this is documented. Like, this isn't some new thing that like what you're saying. This is unique in that this was the Milwaukee Bucks responding to something that happened in their state, but and not something that happened directly to one of their players, even though such racism occurred to John Hansen and then to Sterling Brown. But I always picture, you know, people's faces when, because I would imagine they look a lot like mine when they're told, yeah, I just want to focus on the Lakers playoff rotation moving forward in this one, even though there quite literally isn't a game tonight.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just weird how people don't want to have politics in certain realms of life when honestly, politics is involved in almost, not almost, it is involved in everything that goes on in our lives. Whether it's obvious and in your face or it's more subtle, like politics is involved in everything and sports is not accepted. I mean, geez, you know, to use the historic examples again, if you go back to, the 40s and 50s, take it back a little bit further. Like, how can you not say that there wasn't politics involved if you didn't have black and white players playing on the same team in professional basketball back then? Like, yeah. That's clearly political. It's not like the players themselves decided, hey, like, we just want to play with only black people. Or we just only want to play with white people. Like, something has to happen in society at large to produce that. And obviously, you know, politics is involved with that, with the Jim Crow laws that were in just a Jim Crow society that was happening at that point. And then even with, you know, stuff like stadiums, how they're funded, like those are political decisions. Attracting teams to your city, that's a political decision. Because very rarely does, you know, someone all on their own, like a local businessman decides, I'm just going to start a basketball team. Like they get local politicians involved in raising money and local civic support to get the team there in the first place. So, I mean, geez, like just for the LA Lakers, like the Lakers didn't start in LA. Like they started in Minneapolis. Even before that, they were in Detroit for 1 year. So it's like, you know, they move around to these different cities and these cities entice the teams to come there. And they use a lot of political effort to do that. So, you know, even disregarding the racism, which, you know, hey, if that's your jam, I guess, go ahead. But disregarding the racism, just the pure support in the system around sports necessarily involves politics to make it work.
Yeah. And the other thing that I always kind of fall back on is, like, this isn't even necessarily a political issue. This is a humanitarian issue. This is, you know, somebody getting into their car or just, you know, far too many people of color that are having their daily lives kind of run by this police force that they fear, they live in fear of. And that is something that, you know, should not continue. And it is something that, as a result of this latest and heinous, you know, the video of it was just so impossible to watch without saying what the, and then in the, you know, 48 hours later, you have an alt-right 17-year-old walking around with an assault rifle, shooting people. And, you know, it felt like that was it. That was it. That was the breaking point the players had hit, where not only was Jacob Blake's initial shooting heinous enough in and of itself, but then to have that followed with a heaping side of systemic racism, not 48 hours later in the same exact city. You know, I kind of thought I woke up this morning not thinking it would get here, but it did feel like at some point the players were going to reach a breaking point, given how important these things are. And you know, I fall back on the history of all of this, and it's really interesting to me how you think, you know, the athletes who previously made their statements and previously made their protests would look at the way players and especially leagues have handled this entire situation to this point?
Well, first off, I would just, this is a common complaint I have. It's not specific to you, Anthony, but it's I think folks in our society, it's the way media talks about politics. Like, I think they often conflate politics with partisanship.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're like, oh, politics. They automatically think like, oh, that means it's Democrats versus Republicans, and or whatever political party you're a part of. And it's like that. Like, that's one part of politics. That's partisan part of politics. But like, politics just means like, how are you going to organize, you know, your society? How are you going to, you know, distribute resources and all that? And so I do like how you mentioned that this is a humanitarian issue. But that still means you got to get political effort and political will roused and, you know, organized to address the humanitarian problem. Because, you know, unfortunately, too many people in American history, not just black folks, but Native Americans and, you know, Mexican Americans, other people have had to, you know, obviously they're human. There's no doubt about that. They've had to have, you know, political organization to actually get their humanity recognized, which That's is still point. Clearly not happening as it should. You know, so here we are, you know, 50, 60 years after some of the great players like Bill Russell and Oscar Robertson, who did so much back in the day to try to do their part in making things better. And so I think they're proud of what's happening right now, because, like, hell, Bill Russell already tweeted out that he's proud of what's going on, mm-hmm. which is really one of the most amazing things of being alive right now is, like, I think he's 86 years old, but Bill Russell's like tweeting out, you know, once or twice a week about what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's already tweeted out tonight saying, like, you know, he's proud of what's happened. And with Kenny Smith also walking off the set of TNT. Bill Russell's like, hey, like, thanks, Kenny, for also standing up, you know, showing your support for the players right now. So I think those fellas who were part of the battles of the 60s and going into the early 70s are, they know what these guys nowadays are going through. Obviously, it's a little bit different. Nothing's ever the same, but they know the issue at large, what's going on, and they're proud of what these guys are doing.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you know, you look at some of the pictures of Bill Russell back in the day and Oscar Robertson and Jackie Robinson, and you look at them and it's like, oh, it's black and white pictures. It feels like forever ago. You look at the fashion, people are wearing suits to sporting events.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, that was forever ago. But no, Bill Russell, not only is Bill Russell still around with us, but it was recent enough that Bill Russell can still send tweets. You know, he's still a fresh mind, and that stuff is probably still so fresh in his mind that he can still take part in today's you know, protests or standing up for racial equality. Let's take a quick second and we'll pick up right there when we come back. We are back here with Curtis Harris, who runs Pro Hoops History. And where we left off was basically talking about how crazy it is that, you know, guys like Bill Russell can have gone through everything that he went through as he fought for racial equality. And that we're looking back at that and they're saying, yeah, that was forever ago. That was, you know, and jokes about 2020 being forever long aside. You know, it's crazy it was not that long ago. We're not talking about some immense span of history here.
Well, no. In fact, I used to work as a tour guide at a museum. I live in Washington, D.C., so I worked as a tour guide here in D.C. And the museum dealt with the Civil War and slavery and emancipation. And so I would, you know, obviously that's a pretty heavy topic, but we talk about that with people, and at the end of the tours, you know, try to make it relevant, because this is my big thing with history is I don't study history just to learn about a bunch of old, sometimes dead, sometimes still alive, but just old people. I got to make it important for the folks that I'm talking with or who read whatever I write. And so I would tell the visitors at the end of the tour, you know, like, obviously slavery was a long time ago, but then again, it wasn't that long ago. And then you got to remember that there's Jim Crow laws and all that. So I would wrap the tour up by telling people that now I'm 33 years old, but, you know, I was like, you know, I'm the first generation of my family who've been in the United States that, you know, when I was born, I was considered, you know, at least by law to be, you know, basically a first class citizen, because my parents were born in the late 1950s in Texas, and they're both black. And I can trace my family history, you know, not every piece of it, obviously, but some parts of it back to, you know, the 1820s and 1830s. Those folks were slaves. And so I like, you know, I can follow for like the 1820s and 30s through the 1870s, through the early 1900s, through the 1950s. And it's like, I got almost 200 years of documented family history, and I'm the first generation, me and my brother and sister are the first ones that when we were born, our family could say, like, yeah, we expect that they will be treated as first class citizens. We expect that they'll be able to go to a good school. We expect that they'll be able to vote. But yet we still have these issues still going on. Well, by law, we have the right to vote, but we still got to go through some of these issues with voter suppression and the lines that you got to wait through to get in to vote. Obviously, the police brutality, you know, the number of lynchings doesn't, you know, if you want to consider police killings, you know, as lynchings, they're not as high as they were back in like the 1890s, early 1900s, but it's still ridiculous that you should have this number of people killed for no reason. Mm-hmm. So we've made a lot of progress. Like, I always don't want to be too down and negative, which is hard to do sometimes. But like, you know, it's better than it used to be. But yet there's still too many bad things that reflect what had happened. And it seems too familiar for comfort. So I think that's why these players today just got fed up with it. Like, you know, how long have we been dealing with this? How long have we had to listen to our grandparents and parents talk about this? And now here we are going through it. And today was just like, yeah, they're fed up. They just didn't want to have to deal with it or not deal with it, but kind of subsume it and play another game while their minds are elsewhere. They just want to finally put their foot down and get folks to pay attention to what's been going on for too long.
Yeah, it was very clearly a moment of, look, man, you can love the sport, you can love us playing the sport, but you don't actually love us in the way that you claim to. And this is where we're going to stand up and say, if you're going to love us or you're going to claim to love us and love our sport, you got to really love us. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Just that's why you say that. That brought to mind of, you know, what Doc Rivers said last night. That actually hit me. I was like, oh, I hadn't even like phrased it, even thought about it that particular way, how he put it. Like, I've heard, mm-hmm. you know, variations of it, but just the way he said it, you know, like, you know, Black Americans love this country, but this country doesn't seem to love us back. Mm-hmm. And even that gets into what you were just saying about, you know, you love the player, but you don't really want to love, you know, the whole person that's going on there.
Yeah.
And that reminds me, well, I talked with Chet Walker, who played for the 76ers and the Bulls back in the 60s and 70s. And he was talking about some of the stuff. He was at the 1964 All-Star game. So he was also part of that threat and strike of a game. But Chet Walker said, like, you know, back then, people accepted you and loved you as a performer, as an athlete. But once the game was over with, you know, they treat you like you're nothing. So you're only as good as your performance. And then once that was over with, like, you were nothing to them. So he spoke to that directly. And Doc Rivers, you know, kind of brought it up again in the variation last night. And how you were just putting it right now, again, just reminded me of that.
Yeah, it's the whole, you know, we saw it with Colin Kaepernick, where the response to him kneeling in the first place was, well, if you don't like this country so much, you can get out. You know, and it's like, no, the point here, the reason for the protests is that we do love the country. You know, people of color do love this country. That I come from, I every time I get together, I'm half Mexican. Every time I get together with my family, we always kind of marvel. We are second generation immigrants. We always kind of marvel. Holy crap, it's crazy how far our family has come in this amount of time. And you know, America has helped make that possible. So like my family loves, I love this country, but, and because of that love, I find myself fighting to improve it. And to me, the opposite of love isn't hatred, it's apathy. And that's where we find ourselves right now. I want to ask you quick kind of segue here. Mm-hmm. Social media is playing a huge role in all of this. And it is something that wasn't, obviously, it wasn't, you know, nobody was live tweeting Bill Russell's press conference, right? That wasn't a thing. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, because I come from two frame of minds here. On one part, I say that it helps because it helps spread the word. It gets word out there more quickly and more in a more real manner, right? You're hearing directly from the athletes. You're hearing directly from the protesters. On the other hand, though, it does lead to a hyper-speed news cycle. We have learned with social media that everybody is creating their own bubble. And so it's not always the stuff that the news that needs to reach people. It's not reaching them because they have tailored their social media experience to things that make them happy and feel better about themselves. So I'm wondering, for you, where you're sitting, having seen different protests take place and different, you know, different athletes standing up for these same issues over the years, now, you know, you studied them without social media, and now we're watching them happen with it. Do you think it's a net positive here?
Man, that's a hard one. I mean, as you laid out, social media has its pluses and minuses in terms of organizing, but also in the fact that just keep it at organizing. You know, good folks can organize with it, bad folks can organize with it. So, you know, it cuts both ways. Having a broader, because you're like, if you kind of notice, I'm not just a sports historian. Like, I've studied a lot of American history. Mm-hmm. And when you look at different eras, you know, the latest communications technology always kind of upends what's been going on. So, not to get too deep with it, but like, you know, in the American Revolution, some historians said, like, you know, that wouldn't have been possible without just how many printing presses there were in the United States, or the colonies, I guess, at that point. Huh. But like, there were just so many printing presses and so many people could read in the colonies. African Americans accepted because we were enslaved, so we weren't able to read and write for the most part. But the white people could read, and they published pamphlets left and right. And people were like, well, that's mainly how those ideas got spread so quickly up and down the East Coast. Then by the Civil War, you had the telegraph come out, and the telegraph just sped up things even more, where it's like, okay, now you don't have to wait a week for the news, which that was considered fast. Now you get the news like within two days at most. Now we have social media. Now you don't have to wait. I mean, obviously before that, we had like cable news. That made it like the same day you get the news, and just video of it too. Not even just the news itself, but like actual footage and film of it. But now you get it, you know, 30 seconds after it happens, or live as it happens on your phone. So like every generation's had to deal with kind of the acceleration of how they get their news, and the world always has to deal with that. So the folks in the 60s, I guess to bring it back to them, like Oscar and Bill and Elgin Baylor, who I haven't mentioned, he deserves props for what he did too back then. Mm-hmm. They were the first generation, you know, really of adults to have television in their lives. So with the civil rights movement at that point, you know, they made sure that they would have their marches televised. That if the police did beat them, that they tried to get it televised as much as possible, because they knew the power of imagery. Because like, it's one thing to read about, you know, the cops or cops beating somebody or not being able to vote in Mississippi, but if you could actually show, you know, on TV that night what had happened, you know, in Selma, Alabama, like I mentioned earlier, Bloody Sunday there wouldn't mean as much if it was just, oh, some marchers got beat on the bridge in Selma. It's like, okay, well, like we've heard that a million times. But then you see actually like the cops, I mean, we can watch it now, we can go to YouTube to see the archive. To see the cops, you know, just let loose and start wailing on people with billy clubs, like that means a lot more. So players today adapting to the new now breaking technology, I think they've done a fairly good job with it. There's always mistakes. Thankfully, most of those seem to not be related to social justice. But on the social justice front, they seem to be really good with it. So far, I would say on balance, has been positive. But again, just the player's use of it, I should say, the player's use of it has been very positive. But as I said at the beginning of all this, you know, unfortunately, the forces against social justice can also organize with it. So like that guy that shot the two people or the three people in Kenosha last night, apparently he like was part of some Facebook group that was like some alt-right or white supremacist organizing event. So it's like, all right, the NBA players can use Twitter and Instagram to organize. These guys can use Facebook to counter-organize. So it's kind of the tit for tat, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we wind up too. And you know, again, it's not only that they can organize, but to me, what I think really kind of takes away from social impact's potential here is that, you know, when people would watch cable news, you know, as it in its infancy, and then up to the point where social media and especially the monetization of bipartisan or partisan news, like there was a time you couldn't really avoid certain images, right? They would warn you, like, I just let you know, hey, this is going to be graphic or whatever. So if you want, you can, you know, have kids leave the room or whatever. But you had to watch certain images if you were watching that channel. There are only like five channels. And now there's so much going on that, you know, not only could the initial shooting of Jacob Blake fall by the wayside in certain social media circles, but definitely the response to it, the police response to it. I'm certain that a whole bunch of people I grew up with in conservative Orange County, California, probably haven't heard what the outcome of that was, and certainly the quote unquote riots that followed. I'm sure that on Fox News they've been covered in a very different way than from, you know, how things are probably actually going. And I think that's the real bummer of the modern technology and the modern way that we consume news. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, it's been initially seeing the NBA stand up and the Milwaukee Bucks and then the Orlando Magic agreed to not play tonight. And then the two games to follow them also agreed they weren't going to play. But then the crossover across sports has been fascinating. And it reminds me a lot of a moment that I'm sure you could further detail. So let's take a quick second. When we come back, we'll continue here with Curtis. So I'm looking here, and one of the most iconic pictures in sports history was from June 4th, 1967, right when Kareem and Jim Brown and Bill Russell all stood up in support of Muhammad Ali. And that to me is one of the kind of cooler things of this moment in sports history, is that this isn't just an NBA thing. It isn't even just a basketball thing. Soccer stepped in, even baseball. The Brewers decided not to play their game. Like this, that's to me what makes this feel even more momentous is the cross sports support for each other. Do you see some similarities here between what's going on now and back to 1967?
Well, yeah, I would say there's always similarities and differences. So the similarities are that obviously I think Black players are leading the charge here on this issue. Then also, of course, as you mentioned, the kind of the cross sport, alliance that's happening and trying to address this, to varying strength, because I think, you know, the NBA and WNBA are without a doubt like at the forefront of it. And then the NFL, although their season's not started yet, some of their players have been really at the forefront as well. Mm-hmm. Then you kind of take a big step back. Oh, sorry.
The
Lions did postpone their practice. I forgot about mm-hmm. that. But then after that, you kind of take a step back, and like baseball nowadays rarely does anything kind of shocking. So on the social justice front. Mm-hmm. And then even a further step back is the hockey.
So yeah, I was going to say.
That's when you know things have really gotten bad. That's when NHL players start walking out. But I would say what is actually don't want to be too hokey, but like I thought, like heartwarming is the only phrase I could think of. So my vocabulary fails me at this late hour. But like it's heartwarming to see the fact that it's not just Black players, though, at this point. Because back in the 60s, this is what I'm writing my dissertation partly about. My dissertation is about like the NBA players and how they fought for their labor rights, but how when it came to also the civil rights aspect, the white players weren't always with them, not out of any malice or anything, but the white people were just like, yeah, that's not really my fight necessarily. Like, we support you, but we're not necessarily going to go out on the limb, you know, to go with you on the picket line. But, you know, today, you know, it's like, seems like, you know, best as we can tell, like, seems like the white players are pretty much on board with the Black players too on this issue. You see some white teammates wearing the different slogans on the back of the jerseys. Yeah. I saw Pat Connaughton with the Bucks. He was wearing a t-shirt. So it looked like he hand wrote it himself. Same. So I think it said, children before guns or lives before guns, something like that. But basically, you know, trying to say like, or people before guns. It's like saying, trying to say like, you know, this idea that gun rights and property rights are more important than human lives is ridiculous. So it's good to see that white players are kind of recognizing that, you know, they have a role to play. Maybe it's not Maybe not the leaders of the movement, but you know, nothing substantive is going to change without white people also getting on board, because white people are still the majority of the United States population. So even if every black person, even if every Latino, even if every Native American, even if every Asian American all got on board and said, this needs to change, that's still not half the country. So you're still going to need some white people to get on board too, to help push through some of this stuff. So I'm very happy to see that the white players were also in the NBA and WNBA getting on board with this movement. And that's a big change from the 60s.
So, and not to, you know, I'm not really a fan of this question, but, you know, I can't help myself. Right now, and as is the way that we kind of consume news and sports, is, all right, so this happened, what's going to happen next, right? And I really think there's immense value in just kind of sitting here and contextualizing all of this. And that's what I hope is going to come out of our conversation here. And I think one of the more cynical ways that stuff like this gets kind of set aside is when the opposite side says, well, nothing is going to come out of this, so what was the point of your protest in the first place? And I think that's about as disingenuous as it gets. My question, though, is, you know, given how, I mean, you said earlier, this is bordering on actually unique, you know, in that this is an NBA team and then a league of players getting together and saying, no, we aren't going to sit here and entertain you and distract from the images that you have to see here. And given how different this is, I'm asking you, as somebody who has watched all of this and studied all of this, like, does this actually feel, you know, more momentous? Can it provide more momentum in terms of progress that we can make compared to all of those previous protests and still not having made the progress that either you or I or anybody decent would have liked to this point?
Well, man, historians are not in the business of predictions. That is,
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, the exact opposite of what we try to do.
You're like the opposite of Jimmy Butler, yeah, right? He removes the rearview mirrors from his car. You make him bigger.
We're always looking back. I'm a huge fan of, let's sit back and see how things unfold. Like, don't try to steer things and try to establish what's going to happen before you even know what's going on. So there's a wide array of possibilities for what might happen. So even this afternoon, when the rumblings were starting to get up, like, hey, the players might not play today, like they might not take the court. People are like, what's that going to do? It's like, well, let's just wait and see what happens. It might not do anything. It might lead to nothing. Or I think we all would have been, I mean, imagine like 24 hours ago, you'd have told people like, there's not going to be any NBA playoff games tonight. There'll be postponed at the very least. It's like, okay, that's within the realm of possibility. Still would have been a little surprising. But then if you said WNBA teams are also not going to play, you're like, okay, that's also a little bit more surprising. Like, they're jumping with the NBA, but it's the WNBA. They're also pretty firebrands on this issue. But then you told them like the Milwaukee Brewers weren't going to play a game. It's like, okay, like that was outside the realm of possibility for this issue. And then I saw that the Bucks were on a phone call with like the Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin. And so I was like, huh, seems like that wouldn't have happened if they hadn't sat out this game. So like, so you don't know how this stuff is going, how it's going to play out. Like maybe, again, like maybe enough progress isn't made out of this moment, but maybe more progress is going to be made because of what they did. Maybe not enough, but more than what would have happened otherwise. So it's not good enough, but it's better than what would have happened. So I applaud them for doing what they did.
Absolutely. I mean, that I think that's kind of where this all started from, right? Was they went to this bubble, and I think players and everybody, I think several reporters said that when players arrived into the bubble, that there was this optimism that there was going to be all this momentum that they could build on, and they were going to continue to talk about all of these, not just the issues as a whole, but specific instances. I know, like Rick Carlisle has been starting his press conferences with examples of racism in our country's history, and there was all this optimism in ways and hope that we didn't really see in years prior. And I think that's what made what happened in Kenosha all the more frustrating, was, hey, here's all this momentum. We actually think we're going to make it. We're making a change here. And then, nope. Not only was it the same kind of visuals that have been maddening for so many years, but you saw the exact same news cycle, right? Where it was like, okay, here's a shooting. Here's this really violent video of this thing that should not have happened. And then part of the news cycle was, well, what happened before we saw that clip go live? And then from there, it was like, all right, well, what kind of person was Jacob Blake before all of this? And then you see the protests, and then you see the violence at the protests. And I think from where NBA players were sitting today, and Curtis, I you can speak more definitively to this than I can, but I think that's where it's, you know, you're kind of taught, well, let's be a little cautious in our hope, in our optimism, and then to let down some of that caution and be actually hopeful, and then get reminded, nope, actually, this is still where we live. That, I think, is what really set everything off today.
Yeah, and I would take it, or not, I was going to say take it a step further, but not the right phrase. I guess this is another angle to put onto it. It's also that, you know, they are in the bubble, so, like, they can't, you know, like, in between games, like, they can't be out there and do something. So, yeah, like, imagine if these playoffs were happening under, you know, normal circumstances. Obviously, it wouldn't be in August, but, like, but just normal circumstances, somewhat normal, whatever. They're having a game in Milwaukee. Yeah, it was going to be game 5. Say it would have been in Milwaukee. They could have, you know, the players before game 5 could have maybe held a rally in Kenosha, not that far away from Milwaukee. They could have done that before the game, play the game, then the day after the game, you know, speak their piece, go meet with the family, you know, do any number of things to have gotten people's attention while still being able to play the game. But since they're in the bubble, the only way for them to get attention besides just talking to a camera is to not play the game. Cause like so they've had enough words. Like, the only thing left they can do action wise is either not play this particular game. And if they feel like that doesn't work, then it might just be like not play any more games until they feel like things have, until things have improved enough in their opinion, or maybe they just had enough of a mental break to be able to bring themselves back to being able to play basketball. Cause that's a constant struggle. All people have, you know, when they're pushing or fighting for something, it's just like, you know, how hard to push it until you got to, you know, take a mental break for your own sanity, and not just tie yourself out completely. So I think that also might've played a role in it too with the players, just, you know, just to think out loud here. Is that they, you know, they might have been playing these games. They've been in Orlando for over a month now, away from their families and really away from society. So maybe they just needed this mentally too for themselves, not even just for the police brutality, but just like, we can't do this anymore under these circumstances. So at least for the next couple of days, we need to just kind of reset ourselves where we can get back into a mindset where we can feel like we can handle addressing these social problems while also being able to play basketball at a level we see fit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, whatever it really takes, honestly, this is something that and I think this is something that these actions, taking this action and not playing, is that the players are recognizing, look, us playing and entertaining you guys, that's has to be a little bit more on our terms moving forward. And I fully agree with them.
Yeah.
What's that?
I said, especially at this moment, you know, when, yeah, like I said, they're isolated from their families too. So it's like, they can't even talk to their own kids or their spouses or whatever. So, yeah, it's like definitely at this point, I mean, like a whole lot of different workers in our society at this point, it's like the essential workers and the hospital workers and all that. Mm-hmm. It's like, maybe we should give them a lot more leeway as to how they do their work, because like, they're the ones risking, you know, getting sick, yeah, and all that.
Yeah.
So it's like,
maybe, you would think
if like your order's like 15 minutes late, like, just, calm down.
You put tomatoes on my double-double? Yeah.
Like, just be happy this person is willing to show up at work and make you a sandwich. Like, just calm.
Yeah.
He's up on it.
I agree completely. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Curtis, plug whatever it is that, wherever it is that people can find your stuff. It's great. So wherever he tells you to find it, make sure you guys go check it out. But Pro Hoops History, and then where else?
Yeah, so Twitter, that's my only social media I've tried other things. I hate them all else. I can't stand them. So Twitter, at Pro Hoops History, go there. You find in my bio the link to my Substack, which is Pro Hoops History. And I also do freelance work. So these are my own opinions on this podcast. But I also do freelance consulting work for the Philadelphia 76ers on their franchise history. So you can find it at Sixers History, also on Twitter. So, yeah, that's all I got to plug.
That's great, man. Well, I greatly, greatly appreciate you coming on, especially last second, the way that this all came together. And yeah, man, this was hopefully, you know, enhanced some people's experience through all of this. Because I agree completely with you that this is a pretty unique moment in not just sports history, but history in general.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Anthony.
Anytime. All right, that's going to do it. We'll see how things look moving forward here with everything that's going on. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.